Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of this.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
So for the better part of about a decade, maybe even a little longer, I remember sort of the crisis that fell on my head at a Kanye West concert where I just looked around and was like, okay, I've gotten too old, where he was on stage by himself and the music was good and he had hidden an orchestra, but what he was doing was not for me. And I sort of realized as I looked around a full swaying, noisy electric arena and left after four or five songs. Okay, I've gotten old. This is not my demo anymore. And I have precipitously done some sliding since then. Stugatz has asked me to embrace this. I continue to fight it in hats and skateboard wear, but I failed and I will lose. But lest you laugh too much, Chris, I'm about to head into your wheelhouse. I think in a way that's going to make you feel old. All of you who are on this show feel old because something happened yesterday on Highly Questionable that I was simply not expecting, which is a video was played of a guy, an adult. It looked like it was a bar, but a young adult wearing a Boston Red Sox cap. And very close behind him, in the video, Manny Ramirez was asking him about his hat, and that Boston Red Sox fan, if indeed he was a fan, seemed to have no earthly idea who Manny Ramirez was. And my instinct was to laugh at that person for wearing a hat and knowing nothing, or wearing a hat and pretending to be a Boston Red Sox fan. And Bomani felt the age of it because Bomani looks at that, and his immediate thought was, wait a minute. How long has it been since Manny Ramirez was in a Red Sox uniform? Is it okay to wear a Red Sox hat and not know who Manny Ramirez is? Is it a byproduct of age to be the guy who doesn't know what Manny Ramirez looks like while Manny Ramirez is talking to you? All of you must think while I'm saying this. I gotta think, oh my God, how do you identify as a Red Sox fan and not know that the best right-handed hitter of all time played in your uniform and he's saying hello to you and you have no idea who he is.
Now, he hasn't played there in 12 years.
Correct.
12 years.
Correct. Right. That's why I'm saying I had not considered the possibility that age might be something that allows that because it's been that long since Manny Ramirez was in a uniform. But Chris and Billy are in their early 30s. Tony's younger than that. So I say that to you, and your thoughts are what? Because, Billy, you got a huge smile on your face when you saw the video of Manny Ramirez saying hello to a Red Sox fan who didn't appear to be much of a Red Sox fan.
Man Ram.
I mean, it's not like this was Kurt Abbott or Donnie Murphy. This was Manny Ramirez. He wasn't some role player on this team 20 years ago. He was the team. He was Manny Ramirez. Manny Ramirez is still playing baseball somewhere, I think, in Asia, isn't he? He's every year he's making some sort of comeback, playing on a team somewhere. How do you not know who Manny Ramirez is?
Was there a drastic physical change?
No.
Was there
no.
a Sam no. Sosa situation? No.
There was nothing like that. There was not a Sam Sosa situation.
Some bags under his eyes, a little more gray, salt and pepper in the dreads, but the dreads were still there. He was still Manny Ramirez, man.
Okay.
Billy, thank you for that Kurt Abbott reference, by the way. Like, thank you for that. And also, but yeah, you got to know Manny Ramirez in that spot. That's just a bad look for that fan.
Tony, how? What are your thoughts in this realm?
Who's Kurt Abbott?
Oh, Jesus
I will
Christ.
Fight you, Tony.
Oh, my God.
I will fight
yes,
you.
Tony, oh that's the God. Perfect question. No, why would he know who Kurt Abbott is? Why would Tony have any reason to know who that? But you're talking about a Marlins shortstop from what, 19?
It's meta.
1999?
That was great, Tony.
Shortstop is putting it nicely. He was more just like a utility player.
Yeah, that's so great. Careful. He's a police officer now, and he'll arrest all of you.
You were going to Tony because he's a resident young person, and he somehow made us feel older with that answer than he would have if he just addressed the Manny Ramirez question.
Well done.
Roy, I'm glad that you guys were able to feel the weight of that. Roy, you seemed crushed by the idea that Tony doesn't know who Kurt Abbott is, even though I'm thinking that the majority of our audience doesn't know who Kurt Abbott is. Put it on the poll.
That's my point. He's not Manny Ramirez. With him, it's understandable. Manny Ramirez, it's not. Do you think there's people down here right now? I guess Stanton's a bad example because he was on the team like 5 years ago. But you think there's someone that's like, well, who's Mike Lowell? Who's a Marlins fan?
Yes,
and Mike Lowell was not to the Marlins what Manny Ramirez was to the Red Sox.
I do believe there are Marlin fans, many of them, that would not know if Mike Lowell was standing right next to them in the bar. No, I do. I believe that. I really think
Stu Gatz is right. Yeah, Stu Gatz is right. A lot of younger Marlins fans. Younger Marlins fans? Someone who's like 18 right now? Why would they know who Mike Lowell is?
If Mike Lowell showed up at 50-something years old with dreadlocks behind me and said, hey, what's that Marlins hat you're wearing? Or who's your favorite Marlin? I'd be like, oh, hey, it's Mike Lowell with dreadlocks at 50.
I just realized Manny Ramirez.
You would, but no one else would.
Manny Ramirez is now like sports David Lee Roth, who hears a bunch of people playing Van Halen, and it's a bachelor party, and knocks on the door, and he's like, "Hey, notice you're listening to Van Halen. What do you think?"
Hey, notice you had a Red Sox hat on.
Who's the old guy? Who's a creepy old guy in front?
Well, crappy for Manny, because didn't he have somebody film him? Like, he set this thing up like, hey, I'm gonna tap this guy on the shoulder, and then it's just like nothing.
Well, but that's the reference that Mike is making is a great one, because I was made profoundly sad by David Lee Roth. You could have made the argument across 1984 was the biggest rock star anywhere in music, and the video crew that was following him through a Vegas hallway heard people playing Running with the Devil, and David Lee Roth said, wait till you see this surprise. What good fortune. Someone playing one of my songs while I have a camera crew behind me. Knocks on the door, incredibly sad. The same thing just sort of happened to Manny Ramirez. He walked away feeling, I don't know whether he was broken, but he looked a little bit broken as he walked away in the video that I saw. But here's where I would say, because you mentioned Kurt Abbott and Mike Lowell, Billy, I thought Boston fans were supposed to be better as sports fans.
Oh, that guy's not a fan. He's a total Chad. That guy's a loser. He's not going to listen, let me tell you something about that guy. I don't know him, but I know he peaked in high school. And what he's doing right now is he's on the downswing of his life. So enjoy your time now, buddy, because you're never going to be Manny Ramirez, loser.
A Chad.
What just happened there? What?
You could tell in the video. That guy's not someone that you want to be friends with.
I mean, you are just eviscerating this guy.
You can tell. You guys could tell. Have you guys seen the video? Take a time out and look at the video and tell me. You just assess the guy. This is not someone that you're like, oh, my God. I hope he recognizes me. Please get out of here. Manny Ramirez talking to him is the luckiest thing that's happened in that guy's life.
Here's
that and like his 30-yard rushing game for Mount whatever high that he went to.
Weymouth High. I went to school with a bunch of people like that, Billy. You're not too far off with high school being the pinnacle of their lives. I'm watching the video now for the first time. Man, it still looks like Manny Ramirez. That is a terrible job by the fan. It's a if you're going to wear a Red Sox hat with the history of that team in that city, 2008 is 12 years ago. You have to know who Manny Ramirez is. This is not a fringe player. It might be the best player the organization's ever had. You know?
So Billy, you're telling me, because I feel like the age gap is similar here for you and the player I'm about to name. If Mo Vaughn walked up to you at a restaurant, you would just 1,000% know it was Mo Vaughn?
No, horrible example. Mo Vaughn never played for the Marlins, and I wouldn't be wearing a Mo Vaughn hat.
The severed head of Ted Williams would like a word, Stu Gatz.
Splendid splinter.
Maybe he's one of those guys that are not baseball fans, but actually has a first or last name that begins with the letter B. And he's just wearing a hat because of it.
That's like someone wearing a jersey that says Roy because their name's Roy. It's just the worst.
Yeah, except I'm a fan of the team.
Can we talk about the fact that Ted Williams' head was cut off
today?
Cryogenically frozen.
And cut off. And that, like, there were parts of him missing.
His career batting average was .344. Perhaps I was a tad aggressive with saying that.
I mean, he's great.
And he was a fighter pilot.
Babe Ruth played in a Red Sox uniform for a while as well.
He's no Ted Williams. You got to give longevity, and most people remember Babe Ruth as a Yankee.
The reason that I was looking at this particular guy and raining down judgment on him for not knowing who Manny Ramirez is because the Boston sports fan, if you've been listening to our show for a long time, man, some of the issues that I've had feuding with WEEI, an ESPN affiliate, and some of the fights that we've had over the racist stuff that they've done, and they've had like multiple hosts go into like horrible mental situations that makes me feel really bad for the mental illness stuff that they're dealing with. But we've fought with Boston for the better part of 10 years. And as you've seen the evolution of the industry in various ways, what you have seen is that guy supports Barstool. That guy supports Simmons. That guy supports Joe Rogan. Like, that's the demo. Guy who's young, who's wearing a Boston hat, who doesn't know who Manny Ramirez is. And you got to know, if you can support that much stuff with your fandom, with your allegiance to sports. You remember 10 years ago, we were having the conversation. Would our show ever work in Boston where they're discussing a bunt for 3 months that someone had in a regular season game and arguing about it, where they're still yelling at each other about Grady Little pulling out Pedro Martinez from a game?
I mean, work in Boston. You see the lay of the land? We're not working anywhere, pal.
Where are we working?
Such a good question.
He still looks like Manny. That's the problem.
Manny also, like, very notoriously was in the news a lot for all of his steroid suspensions and use. And then there was the whole thing with the Dodgers. Like, it's not like he was, like, this quiet, great baseball player.
No, but, Bill, I'm guessing if Gary Sheffield showed up to a bar, like, you know, and approached a fan with a Marlin hat, I'm guessing less than 50% of the fans would recognize him. I'm serious.
Gary Sheffield played on the Marlins for like 4 years.
I know. It was a 97 team, right?
We're bad examples of this, Billy, because we're like diehard. So, like, we're going to, like, you would know Brad Penny if he.
Manny Ramirez looks exactly the same.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Mike Lowell showing up with dreadlocks would be something else. I would be really confused.
That would be great.
Like, Chris, I said that as an example. Like, I know who he was right away. Like, right. Hey, that's Mike Lowell with dreadlocks. But I'd be like, you look familiar, but where have I seen you before? It'd take me a little bit to kind of place Mike Lowell with dreadlocks as, hey, that's Mike Lowell. Why does he have dreadlocks? I hope things are going all right for him right now.
Do you guys at this point ever know when we're on air or when we're not on air? Because that seems like a dangerous thing. And we've been on air while you guys talk about this. And it seems like we maybe should be a little more careful in terms of how it is that we do this. But there are a number of questions I've wanted to ask you here today.
We're on air from 10 to 12. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is not on air right now. We're just letting it fly,
Dano. No, but
Dano.
No, Stugatz, don't give me that letting it fly, Dano, because the number of times I've walked in here recently where I can hear you talking to everyone always super loud because you always assume that everything you're saying is being recorded. Like, it's not, you don't talk to anyone normal anymore. I've noticed these distortions with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman, where the way they talk to human beings away from First Take is the way they talk on First Take because they've got to fill 2 hours, whether they have 2 hours of news or not.
Right.
Kellerman says his wife complains about it. That he has become a different human being who simply can't talk in 20 seconds anymore because it's always required that he talks for a minute and 20 seconds in order to carry the load when they don't have 2 hours of content. And I've seen this distortion. Mike, have you seen this distortion with Stugatz where he's always talking extra loud, extra energy in the event that we are taping him? I always feel when I walk into the studio like Stugatz is now filming or taping something because of the energy that he has in front of every microphone.
It's also because he's deaf.
Yeah.
He talks louder because not just because he's this abrasive Northeasterner. He talks loud because he's trying to hear himself.
Correct.
Now I've got Max's wife asking him at the dinner table, honey, how was your day? And then him just doing a full segment, like 9 straight minutes of talking.
Was it a good one? Was it a bad one? Yeah, I could see
786, right. 456.
I had a great conversation. I had a great conversation. I was talking to Dominique and he didn't believe a story that I was telling him. Did I tell you guys this story? I think I might have. I did tell you the story, but if you're new to the gathering here, maybe you didn't hear the story out there where I'm telling Dominique that when I met Max Kellerman on the set of PTI. It's my very first time meeting him, and he's having some sort of existential crisis because he's 33 years old and Jesus had accomplished more things than he had by the age of 33. And he was saying, among other things, I thought that he was the greatest public orator since Malcolm X. And so when he said that, I was sort of marveling at it. This is a guy who was on television when he was like 15 or 16 years old, New York cable television, talking about boxing. This is a guy who you have to check out his rap video because he was very young at the time. And it's fun to watch Max sort of be distorted by the imprinting of New York City and the hip hop flavor of New York City. And so I call Max with Dominique on the line because he didn't believe the story. And Max is like, Dan, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, the story you're telling. It was not Malcolm X. It was Martin Luther King. I said I was the greatest public orator since Martin Luther King. And so he has accomplished less than Jesus in just being the sidekick to Jesus on First Take. He sits up there, and he has absolutely been distorted by that. And I'm sure doing a radio show solo for 2 hours isn't going to distort that even more, because it's going to happen to Mike Greenberg here soon, where he's going to get home and he's just going to be talking for longer spaces than he's used to, because what he does on Get Up is just sort of control traffic. What he does on a radio show by himself is have to give 2 hours of opinion.
How do you talk after all that talking, though? I mean, I don't say a word to anyone the rest of the day when I leave here. And that's because there's no cameras or microphones on it.
One of the best parts about Super Bowl week was getting to stand behind Max Kellerman in the buffet line of that breakfast downstairs and just getting to observe him making his breakfast at a breakfast buffet without him knowing that I was watching him.
Very meticulous.
He made a very standard breakfast, but I just felt very privileged. It was one of those moments where I was just like, look where I am. I'm right behind Max Kellerman in a breakfast buffet, and Stephen A. Smith's over there having a bagel. I'm like, wow.
You experienced that so differently than I did, where I'm like, where's this damn food for the enterprise that exists here? Like, where for years is this spread? You know, our cameramen are trying to steal muffins downstairs from the Clevelander, and I'm getting a bill for things you guys are eating because you guys, they're telling me, hey, it's $7 a day because Chris Cody is coming in and grabbing one of those croissants on his way in. That's not for him, that for hotel guests. Who here was the one who got me in trouble by grabbing at the breakfast buffet that's not ours, that belongs to the Clevelander? Because you experienced Max and Stephen A. Look, I get to watch them eat food, and I experienced it. Why are those mother bleepers eating my food, and why don't I have that food here every day?
I will not reveal who it was taking the food, but his name rhymes with toy.
Roy.
Roy, is that what he meant?
Roy, are you the one who got me in trouble because you can't control your eating? Like, where I had to pay that disgraced Clevelander owner, I had to pay him like $7 a day because my staff is eating all of their food?
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
I do. Let's be honest. We've all walked through that buffet and grabbed a piece of bacon.
No, we
haven't. Bagel. Oh,
no,
okay.
We haven't.
Sorry about that.
You're just telling on yourself.
Okay.
The first day we were here, the first day we were at the Clevelander, I'm not making this up. Some of you have heard this story. I'm talking to the owners of the Clevelander, and I am telling them that we are not going to be an intrusion. We are going to fit here. We are going to respect our space. We're not going to steal their food. We're not going to make any asks. We're just going to behave and be good partners. And as I'm having this conversation in the lobby of the hotel, my father emerges from the kitchen complaining that there's no coffee. Like, he emerges from their kitchen, which you're not allowed to be in. It's like a restaurant kitchen. My father's shaking an empty glass at me saying, hey, where's the coffee?
Not going to be a problem.
Can you guys help me with something that we were talking about during the local hour with David Sampson? Because he was saying something that I had not considered, which is that Mark Cuban just gave J.J. Barea. Did you see this? That J.J. Barea, who is a specific word association for Miami fans and Miami Heat fans, because the first year of LeBron James, it was fairly amazing to watch him be afraid to post up J.J. Barea in a finals game and do anything with J.J. Barea guarding his ankle. And J.J. Barea, Mark Cuban just gave him after signing him, because I was confused last week when I saw them signing him again. And I'm like, really? The Mavs now with Luka, they're going to the J.J. Barea well again? They signed him for a year, $2.6 million, as a goodbye gift, as a parachute. They waived him yesterday.
Okay.
It was basically to give him that money because Mark Cuban wanted a guy who was a part of the championship run. And I'm guessing he's the last part, right? Is he not the last piece still remaining on that team? I would assume he has to be after a decade. The last piece still remaining from the Mavs' one championship season. How did you experience that signing and that release, Stugatz, and the information that I'm sure you're hearing for the very first time right now because you don't know anything going on in sports?
I happen to like that. I think it's a nice touch by Mark Cuban. I do like the way that Mark Cuban treats his players, cares about his players, doesn't forget about his players. He, you know, he gives Delonte West, allows him to live in his house. He's trying to help him out, trying to get him help, get him rehab. So I just like it. I think Mark Cuban's a good owner and an owner that I think most players would like to play for, you know?
That was my reaction as well. I was surprised by David Sampson's reaction, which was a more cynical, that's eyewash, that's public relations. Mark Cuban cares a great deal about being liked and being seen as someone who's likable, and he just bought himself $2.6 million of I really care marketing and publicity. I was not that cynical about it. I was surprised that he was, because I think it can be both things. I think Mark Cuban can want to be liked and see good marketing and publicity opportunities and also care deeply about Delonte West having mental illness and being homeless and needing help and getting him help. It can be both of those things. You don't have to ascribe a cynicism to it.
Well, it is both of those things. If you're going to do something like you did for J.J. Barea, or more importantly, Delonte West, people are going to pay attention to it, and you're going to get positive PR out of it. You have to ask yourself, is he doing it for the right reasons? And I believe that Mark Cuban is. I do. I think Mark Cuban can get positive PR whenever the hell he wants to get positive PR.
I think Mark Cuban is needed. If you've paid attention to what's going on within that organization, he's needed good PR, and I'm not saying that's his motivation because he's doing it so subtly. Like, remember, he's caught on someone's cell phone video meeting Delonte West at a gas station. He's not doing that in front of cameras, and he himself is not putting it out there. I do think because of how subtle he presents himself publicly and in his interviews and what he's doing through his works, I think he knows that he kind of got away with something terrible, that he admits his eye wasn't on that ball. He was doing things like taking care of Delonte West and his basketball players and just the basketball operations side of things. I think he's a changed man because he kind of got away with something that maybe other owners might not have survived. Remember, Mark Cuban was the guy saying, man, this is a this Donald Sterling precedent, this is dangerous. I think he's changed a little bit.
Okay, it's interesting that you say change, because I think it's hard to ever know those things by just the public face that someone is showing you. But I, too, have arrived at Mark Cuban being changed, but not the same way that you have. I've arrived at Mark Cuban being changed in that particular incident within his workplace, where he was overseeing a culture that had been contaminated, that he got scared by the Me Too stuff and what he realized that he was scared straight. That guy was a renegade rebel, would say anything, had no fear, had the F you money of you can't do anything to me ever. And I see a more reserved public figure now. Apart from the nice deeds, I just see someone in front of the cameras who isn't quite as 100% confident on I'm doing everything my way because I've got all the FU money that has always allowed me to do everything exactly my way.
Yeah, but the threat of taking away something that he very truly
loves.
I mean, owners with passion for their teams, the city of Dallas, I mean, that
had to be scary.
Their spot of real estate right there. That had to be super scary for him because the thing that he loved could have been taken away from him if he didn't correct things immediately and dramatically.
Do you guys think that Shark Tank was another buildup of his public image too, to get everybody in America to see him? Oh, Mark, you know, Mark Cuban's a relatable guy.
Sure.
He's investing in small businesses.
He does plenty of interviews, Tony, in the political realm. I think this was a man that was gearing up for aspirations of higher office. And then that thing happened and he realized, oh my God, I have this horrible blind spot and everything that I'm building towards could be taken away from me like that. I got to make some changes.
You asked if everyone from that roster is no longer in the league. I believe Tyson Chandler is still hanging around.
I meant on that team. I meant still on the team. Tyson Chandler was playing.
Right.
I meant a championship morsel still playing for the Mavericks. It's interesting what Mike Ryan says there about Mark Cuban, because the way that I have experienced whatever it is that you guys are seeing publicly from Mark Cuban is this particular change. A guy like that, and never mind just not having to care what others think, but when you're that kind of visionary that can, he could have gotten in on Uber very early, very cheap. He says it's the worst thing that he has ever done in terms of investment, not getting in there, not seeing the value of that. What you see happening with Mark Cuban publicly to me is that Mark Cuban wasn't used to, wait a minute, I've got a total blind spot. He felt some of it with the Sterling stuff when he was being a little too honest about walking on the other side of the street when a hooded black male comes across your path. He felt it there some, where people reacted to like, hey, what are you doing there? Admitting sort of your racism in a way that an owner of an NBA team shouldn't admit his own racism. But I think he got swallowed by his blind spot where he had no idea, coming up in a frat boy culture, coming up specifically through his kind of fame and wealth, where you're doing whatever you want. And women during that time, men who are powerful, were used to women being ornaments and Wolf of Wall Street. And it's all put it on boats and shake it. And this is what I deserve with my wealth, is to be able to do whatever I want with women. They belong to me. To have that particular frat house blind spot creep up on him in a way that endangered everything he cared about, it will absolutely get your attention. Imagine always being the smartest guy in every room you're walking into and how that distorts you, Stugatz.
I know, it's difficult.
We both went for the same.
Heavy's the head that wears the crown, Dana.
I mean, Mike is still making the jokes in his ears. They're just going too slow. You saw what happened with Alanis Morissette yesterday. It's just happened. Stugatz is just staring like a dog, like a trained dog, into the studio, and I'm just waiting for Mike to get the line out so that Stugatz can repeat it.
Just play it safe. Afraid to fly. I don't remember the rest.
You are Johnny Depp. You realize that? You've become Johnny Depp at this point. If you were reading that story in the Hollywood Reporter, Stugatz, I know you weren't. But
Depp and Clooney, Stugatz, huh?
How about that? I mean,
Johnny Depp, there were some great details in that story in the Hollywood Reporter about how radioactive he is. And we've talked about some of them before. The $5 million spent making sure the ashes of Hunter S. Thompson were, you know, exploding over a canyon somewhere. $30,000 a month in wine bills.
He has to regret the cannon thing. I mean, at some point, he's going to know. If he doesn't yet, he's going to.
But the thing that we were laughing about during the local hour is Johnny Depp. The details are amazing in this story. One of them is the bodyguards, plural, who would have to wipe the drugs off of his face in order to get him to a scene of some sort where they just have to brush drugs off his face. But one of the things that was told in that story is that he was just merely needing an earpiece because he wasn't bothering to remember his lines. And that's where we're headed, Mike. I'm sorry to tell Mike and Billy this now, but Stugatz, if you haven't seen enough of the sort of lazy entitlement of Stugatz who can't hear and the jokes are coming out slower because he needs the help through his ears on some of this stuff, it's going to only get worse. That's not going to get better. There is no better from there, even with hungry, less lazy, seeing dollars in his eyes, Stugatz.
Perfect time to set out on his own, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got Cameo all set up.
Yeah?
Do you? What's going to happen there?
Well, we can't launch it until...
But tell us, our audience is excited about you cashing, you just stealing their dollars.
So I have the, I got the profile, I got the codes from the owner, that's the invite. I set up my profile. Today I do the video, and that's the video to announce, hey, I'm on Cameo. Then I personalize a video to send out to all the people who are following me on Cameo and social media. And then on January 5th, I start collecting cash. I mean, great. And they send it right into your bank, direct deposit. This is amazing. I mean, I have to do work. I mean, I have to create these videos, but someone will do them for me.
I was going to say, this is going to last about a month until Stu got to realize he has 1,000 videos.
They're
to do
all going to pile up. You can't get him to do like one teaser for guys, the next
I don't
I'll do
know,
it at
man.
Home with Stanzik, buddy. We'll be good. Don't worry. I'll send it to you later. I think and he's going to have 6,000 video requests because it's always, I'll handle that tomorrow.
I think you guys are underestimating the cocaine snort of cash that this is. Like the direct deposit of, wait a minute. I can just make a video and there will be cash deposited in my account. I think you guys are underestimating the greed of this creature.
I will also tell you this. There is a referral program where if I can get some of my friends to join Cameo, looking at you, Dan.
I'm not doing
you,
that.
Mike, looking at all you guys. Shipping
shocking
container,
that you're trying to get us into a pyramid
then
scheme.
Then I get a piece of yours. How about that?
Stugatz is just going to start selling Monat on Instagram next.
What do they need Stugatz for? If you guys want to set up your own Cameo accounts, you guys should also do that if you want to do that. As we consider whether or not, I'm the only one who has to consider whether we're cheapening everything around here. Like Stugatz can't be left to his own devices on all this stuff because I can't
can.
Tell you. No, he can't.
Yeah,
no.
Let this bird soar. No. Let this corrupt bird soar.
It can't be on everything, Mike. He will cheapen and destroy and urinate everything if you don't pull on the leash every once in a while.
I think
even
guys,
he knows that about himself.
You guys are over. Thinking this, I too was a little worried, like, man, there's a deadline on these Cameo videos. You have to get it done inside of like 10 days or something like that. But he's going to price so many people out with his going rate.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
I've got him just recording like 10 generic ones that he wants to send to like all 2,000 people that requested them.
You know what? Something I hadn't thought of yet, but a great idea by you.
You know what you thank should you. Do? You should
be my manager.
Should have, if these guys don't decide to do Cameo themselves, you should absolutely have a price range, a menu of options where you can get fake Stugatz, Billy as fake Stugatz for if Billy's not doing his own, how you guys can negotiate that on air right now. If somebody wants the fake Stugatz, what do they have to do?
I think the fake Stugatz would be a hit on Cameo. I also think Billy would be a hit on Cameo, though. So I think Billy should consider that. And remember, you're a friend. I referred you. That's 5% off the
exactly,
top for me.
Yeah.
And if you go fake Stugatz, I get 75%. So if you want to go fake Stugatz, I'll take 74. You take one. Good?
I'm sitting here trying to do something here. Mike, what can I say? You haven't actually talked to anybody about what can I say about some of the charitable stuff that we have very briefly talked about, because I believe the next step for us, one of the things that has been a little bit confining.
I think you can say it to answer your question. I know where you're getting at. I think you can say it on your own personal social media, but just because ESPN and Disney has one charitable partner and they don't want to set the precedent of opening up the portals to other ones, we should probably respect that for the time being. And then January 5th, go crazy, my friend.
All right, so we've been kind of frustrated, though, or I've been kind of frustrated in that all of the support that this audience is willing to throw behind projects of worthiness, we've only been allowed to put in one place because, and understandably, ESPN gets hit up so much for donations and for help in this realm that Jimmy V is the only thing that they do. And by edict and by plan, that's it. That's where money, charitable money can go. But I do have some plans lest you think we're just going to, that Stugatz is just going to spend all his time rummaging around in your pockets where you guys can help others other than Stugatz with some of your support and your money.
You're not talking about my Cameo money, though, right?
Well, explain to me your Cameo money, because I want to understand this deal, and I'd like these guys to all get on Cameo in the event that the audience does want to hear from us. But how are you negotiating? When Mike says that you're going to price yourself out, like, have you already made the prices on that?
Well, I think what Mike is saying is I'll be willing to do it for so much less than anyone else that they'll automatically.
I was going
the
other way.
I'm not going to price out.
No,
Mike.
You should not go cheap.
But you can also, I've learned this from the folks at Cameo, you cannot set it too high early on. You can set it low and then go higher. But you can have like a menu. You want a hot take, you want this, you want 30 seconds, 60 seconds, minute and a half, and you can have a menu like that.
So what are the price range possibilities here?
I mean, anywhere between, depending on what you want me to do, it could be $5 all the way up to $5,000.
So, audience.
Jesus.
Listening audience, if you're interested in booking Stugatz on Cameo, I'll tell you right now, go for the cheapest menu item because he is totally allergic to sticking to any sort of time restraint. You're going to get so much bang for your buck. You're going to get what the people are paying for 90 seconds. You're going to get
that. Why are you undermining Stugatz's business plan by telling people a little too much about his business?
I'm telling you, for $5, you get 10 seconds, and I'm not going a second over 10 seconds. Yeah, I'm telling you right now.
We'll see about that.
I'm not.
We record your lookies every day. Well, not anymore, because they don't want us to do them.
Oh, yeah, we can't promote our show.
How much work do the guys have to do if they want to get on Cameo? Because I will be revealing some of this stuff over time. I don't know where the sensitivities are just yet, but you should stick with us. And we're telling you again in this format because we're going to need the support when we lose the ESPN television platform and the ESPN radio platform and the ESPN Plus platform. We need the support of this audience because the things that we have negotiated here is that we get to take the audience with us, that we have access to the audience. I very much valued the support that you guys give us, and it's been overwhelming, as I've told you. So please tell the people that you know that don't know that we're leaving ESPN in a month to get the Lebatard and Friends feed, to get South Beach Sessions, Mystery Crate, Supodity, and the radio show feed that is the Dan Lebatard Show with Stugatz, so that we have access to you and to be able to tell you all of the things that we're doing. But one of the constrictions, because the Disney culture is a very strong and formed culture, is that our guys in the shipping container got priced in a place with their salaries that just were according to the Disney pyramid for a whole lot of folks that get titles here, and then this is their pay. And during that, I was not allowed, for reasons that I still don't understand, to give money directly to the people that work here, because then you get into a situation where I'm their boss instead of the person paying them being their boss, even though everyone kind of knows that I'm the boss. So the T-shirt company and the Moss events were made simply to find inventive places to get our crew paid a little better. And so I ask you, Mike, as we head into the unknown here, because I really don't actually want to cheapen what we do. We understand that the Stugatz character, that this is what he is. But I would love if people want access via Cameo to the shipping container and personalized videos. Like, what's stopping us from them setting up the accounts that allow them to do that?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing is stopping them.
Nothing. I think people, it's super easy. I mean, they sent me a link. They gave me a password, invitation. It was easy.
Guys, if you do it, just make sure to give Stugatz a referral, because that was intentional, him mentioning that. So he wants a credit.
I do. Yeah. We'll throw it all into a pool and figure out how to spend it, you know?
No, we won't.
Yeah, we won't.
It's going to your actual new pool.
It's going straight to your bank account. You just told us it was a direct deposit.
Well,
you
that's mine. I'm saying on the referrals, I'll throw the referrals into a pool. We'll have a big party one day.
In your brand new pool.
In my pool.
Now, how has it entered you guys actually, because our show is a distortion where all of us are actually ourselves, but the volume gets turned up in certain times of character playing. How scared are you guys really about the idea of getting into business with Stugatz in any real way, like Cameo? Because you guys don't need him or the referral, but he will get a percentage of this if you guys give him the referral.
I don't want his fingerprints on anything going forward in terms of money. It's fine. We had a separation of church and state before. Now we got to figure stuff out. And this guy, he's a schemer.
All right, I will tell you what. I will put you guys in touch with the owners of Cameo.
That's the referral.
No. I will put you in direct communication with the owners of Cameo.
Again, a referral.
No, I am telling them, the owners of Cameo, hey, Billy, Chris, Tony, Roy, perhaps Dan, maybe Mike. This is not a referral. This is just an introduction.
This is textbook referral.
I don't want any of their money. I do not want any.
I just Googled it. This is what a referral is.
I don't want any of their money. I'm going to tell the owner, but I am guessing, okay, when I send you guys all the number, okay, that none of you are going to sign up. And then I'm going to have to put the sales pressure on you, and then it becomes a referral.
Why wouldn't they sign up if this is just money in an account? I know Roy might be signing up right now. Roy the Muffin Thief might be signing up right now for free access to money. You might get a Roy performance that's never been seen on this air before. Roy, what are you thinking right now as you hear this?
I'm thinking that I'm probably not going to sign up, but just based on Stugatz and his scheming ways.
No. Here's what I'm telling you. I give you the number. You have till Monday to call the owner and get yourself signed up. If you don't do it by then, I start taking referrals, okay? Because I'm going to get you to sign up.
You're going COB on the crew? Yeah, You're already going COB on the shipping container.
I see dollars everywhere,
Why did you just text me a link for Herbalife?